Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as always, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good, Scott. UC's 3-1 after putting up a pretty disappointing performance against Ohio State to open a brand new Fifth Third Arena. But they've entered the cupcake part of the schedule. They've won three in a row. They've won, you know, I don't want to say like comfortably, but they have won all three of the last other games. What are your thoughts?
Like the Milwaukee game, like almost the epitome of what Matt and I were talking about in the last show. Just being kind of like frustrated with like where this offense is. Like that game was tied at halftime against arguably like one of the worst teams they're going to play this entire season. And like UC was able to break through in the second half and like pull it away. Then apparently after the game, just going the general strokes real quick. Like Bickford is like, hey, Jerron Cumberland, you're like our best player. You should score in the first half too. And then like he just goes like insane against Western Michigan. Like 19-point first half. Bearcats never trail and just like whoop that ass for like, their best game of the season so far.
Yeah.
Like a nice little start, 3-1. It seems like they're starting to like at least round into some form. What have you thought about? Let's just go big picture first. What have you thought about the season so far?
Yeah, I feel like it's pretty much been kind of playing out. Like obviously we wanted to beat Ohio State to start the season. They should have. They could have. I still don't understand why Jerron Cumberland sat for 15 minutes of that first half because he had two fouls. Mick Cronin needs to really loosen his little auto bench policy. But, I mean, the bigs were, you know, okay in that game. You know, they're definitely going to be the weaker part of the offense. Cumberland's definitely going to have to hoist this team on his back and lead them to victory. He did that last night against Western Michigan. I mean, he had an outstanding game. 27 points, 11-19 shooting, to your point. It seems like after the first couple of games, he's sort of started to take that leadership position. You know, like, instead of passing the ball, looking to shoot more, etc. That's good. I think that's a great sign. The bigs are still a work in progress. You know, Trey Scott and Nysir Brooks, they had a double-double against Milwaukee, but Milwaukee doesn't play any forwards, really. They have a four-guard offense. I could probably get a double-double against them. What I thought was actually a little encouraging last night is not only that they led Western Michigan for the entirety of that game, and it really wasn't that much in doubt. Like, to your point, it was their best performance of the season. The bigs actually play pretty okay against what was pretty solid competition. I mean, Western Michigan had Seth Duggan, a 7-foot center. He was only 3 of 6 from the field. He did have 12 points. He only had 5 total rebounds. Nysir Brooks had a double-double on him. Trey Scott had an off game. But Mamadou Diarra played pretty well. He had 6 points. Or, I'm sorry, not 6 points, 6 boards. You know, they had some real decent competition down low, and the bigs played pretty well, which is sort of encouraging in itself going forward as well.
Fix it. If you listen to, like, the last episode of the podcast, like, Matt and I weren't really happy with, like, the lineup they rolled out with. Like,
don't hold back.
The two bigs.
Like, Mick's not listening. Just say what you want to say.
And then, like, as you mentioned, both had double-doubles against Milwaukee. Like, I see Brooks back-to-back double-doubles. Like, and these are the type of games where he's gonna shine, like, against teams that really can't guard his size. Like, he's able to get in there, block shots, get rebounds, get those easy buckets. Like, Trey Scott had an off game, but, like, you don't really need him to score every game. You would like to see him board every game, like only 3 rebounds in 30 minutes. I think he's got to do a little bit better than that. But and it was it's it has been good to see Kane Broom get off the schneid and like have a couple of good back-to-back games. Because Lord knows this offense needs another guy who can score. It's like nothing against Nicaea Brooks, but he's not going to put up double-doubles the whole entire season.
Yeah.
So like you have to have one of your other guys score. And it's been Kane Broom. And you had more of the balanced effort against Milwaukee. And then like Cumberland like really lead the way against Western Michigan. And hopefully we see more of the balance and like less of, you know, just like one guy completely dominating the offense. But like you're never going to complain about 27-6 from Cumberland.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, I kind of go the other way. If he's going to score at least 20 points a night, UC should be in a good position in every single game. It's those games when he takes the night off that you're going to really struggle. Because there's no one else on this roster at this point who's really going to give you that offensive pop when you need it. Like, it's not going to come from Jennifer. Keith Williams has shown some abilities. He seems to be a pretty good role player. I mean, he's worked his way into the starting lineup, and he's definitely earned it, and he's really proving why he's there. But, you know, Kane Broom has been really inconsistent, and Logan Johnson is a true freshman who's barely seeing the floor, and Rashad Fredericks is kind of the same way. So it has to come from Cumberland. And if he's gonna average 20 a night, and UC has to kind of go through him, sort of like what they had to do with Kilpatrick several years ago when he was basically accounting for a good chunk of the offense, I think that UC should be okay. It's when those nights when he's only scoring 10 or so is when I would be really concerned. I don't know. I mean, on the whole, this team is what it is. They got limited offensive pop. And I think, you know, I feel like we've talked about this to death. They should drop one of their forwards from their rotation and go with a fourth guard. But I mean, Mick's never going to do that. But given what they have right now, I mean, they're not playing too bad underneath. I mean, it is, you know, lesser competition. But last night they were basically playing a mirror of themselves underneath, and they completely dominated.
And that was really the first game where they kind of like tightened up the rotation a ton. Like we saw a lot of it against Milwaukee too, where they really went six deep, and then Trevor Moore played like 12 minutes, and got some minor minutes from the guys on the bench. Obviously, they were without Jennifer in that game, so he was sick. But even then, like you play six guys 20 minutes, and like a lot of the other guys just play garbage time. Like,
yeah.
DR is not going to play 12 minutes to get, against anybody important. And it was kind of, like, jarring to see Logan Johnson just, like, out of the rotation, I think, again. But, like, three fouls. It seems to annoy Mick. But, yeah, that's, like, to your, like, greater point. Like, Cumberland obviously has to score. Like, if he, like, score a lot of points. It's like in the Milwaukee game, he only scores 14 on 5-13 shooting, and like their offense didn't struggle, like per se, but like that game was really close, and like they really needed a like, big effort the last 10 minutes to put that game away. Like and then when he jumps out big and it helps get everybody else involved, like you have like your most comfortable win of the season. It's just a lot of pressure on him to really be the man, and like he's. They gotta accept the role. Like, there's really no way else to say it because he's like the best 3-point shooter. Like, he's the best free throw shooter. Like, he's gotta really like grasp that role as the superstar of this team because it's only gonna get tougher from here.
Yeah, and I think it's from listening to Mick's. Post-game press conference from last night's game, it sounds like that's the mindset that Cumberland is finally starting to embrace, is the go-to-guy attitude, which seems a little strange because he was probably the go-to-guy at Wilmington. He could have very well been the go-to-guy at a lot of his AAC or AAU teams before he came to UC. He sort of had to take a backseat role for his first two seasons with Jacob Evans and Gary Clark and Kyle Washington kind of leading the way offensively. It's sort of a little odd that it's taken him a little bit to re-embrace that role, but I mean, if he does and he puts up something like 20 a night, UC should be in a solid shape going forward. I mean, I still say this team, this program is penciled into 20 wins a season, no matter what happens. They could completely turn over the roster and this team could probably win 20 games. But they're gonna be inconsistent. Like I would expect them to struggle against George Mason on Friday. I would expect them to wallop Arkansas Pine Bluff. I would expect them I missed Baylor / Ole Miss, whoever wins that game. Whoever they play out of that game, I would expect them to struggle there. I expect them to struggle against most of the solid teams on this schedule. That's just what happens in a rebuild year. But if Cumberland can go out there and be the guy, and everyone around him knows he's the guy, and he lives up to those expectations, they could pull off a couple of upsets. They could beat Xavier. I mean, hell, they could beat Xavier without Cumberland right now. That's another team going under a rebuild. They could beat UCLA. They could beat Mississippi State. They could go out there and win the AAC potentially if we're looking way far ahead. But it's pretty encouraging when Cumberland puts up 27 points almost easily. Like, he didn't need to put up 27. He just kept throwing it up.
Yeah, like the East Hiz game is something that really stands out. He's just like a natural scorer. And like he hasn't really had the chance to like show it completely because, like, as you mentioned, like he's had to like be more like the like team role and not like the superstar player with so many players, not just like above his class, but like those guys really dominated the ball, especially like Jacob Evans, like ran the show last year. But like to the greater picture, it's like what these teams coming up, Georgia Mason, and it should be Baylor. It's like Ole Miss is trash. Like, yeah. So like if you play Baylor, unless like you somehow get upset by George Mason, like whatever, we'll just assume they win against Georgia Mason. It's like you have like a lot of talent just going to get thrown at them, and it'd be really interesting to see like who else can like fill the void, just because. So far, shooting-wise right now, like, this team has been, like, really bad, like, from the field. Like, three-pointer-wise, they're 27%. Like, free-throw-wise, 67%. Like, outside of Cumberland, they've made 9 threes. Like, just
unheard of.
Like, your second leading three-point guy has 3. And it's,
well, that's a problem. Yeah, that's a problem. It's like it's Kane Broom and then giant question mark on who you're going to get from the outside. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's like those spot up for Jennifer shots. And like Frederick's 0 for 7. Trevor Moore off to a really cold start from the field. 209 overall, 0 for 5 from 3. I think he's only scored 7 points in the first 4 games. Like, if you said, like, he scored as many points as Sosume, you'd be like, oh, what? And that's happened so far. And he's, like, been one of those guys that like, you would be like, oh, he can pitch in 7 to 8. It could be fine. And he's pitching 7 points total.
Yeah.
But, like, the balance has been kind of nice to see. But, like, you really need somebody to grasp that second role. I think that's going to be, like, the interesting part, like, playing back-to-back days against, like, Georgia Mason. Like, not amazing, but like a well-coached team. It's going to give you, like, solid effort. Like, they're 1-3, but they've lost, like, one game by 1 point, one game in overtime, and they've lost a 9-point game. So, like, maybe not the greatest team, like, but a team you should beat. And then you play, like a Baylor, like a big test. So it should be like a weekend to really get a grasp on where this team is after the Ohio State game.
Yeah, because Baylor ranked 51st in KenPom. UC is 45th for comparison, and George Mason is somewhere in the 150s. It should be kind of a litmus test kind of weekend. Like, if UC comes out of that with the title, you can probably feel pretty good about this team being more above average this season and kind of in line with what we've seen from this program the last decade or so. But if they end up, God forbid, losing to George Mason on Saturday, or on Friday, and losing to the loser of Baylor and Ole Miss the following game, I'm not going to feel too good about the program, or at least the team this season coming out of it. But if they end up being both of them, I mean, that could just be good news going forward. Because Baylor, you're right, the winner should be Baylor coming out of the Ole Miss game. And that should be a good, solid team that's kind of right about where they are in terms of rankings. And it's like if you're trying to like transpose that over to like what they could expect in the conference, probably like a Temple type program or like a Houston type program right now, where, you know, if UC can beat Baylor, you can probably expect them to play fairly similarly in terms of quality of play against like the upper whatever fourth or third of the AAC.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Like, both Baylor and Ole Miss, like, projected on Campbell to go 15-15. Like, obviously the big thing there is, like, Baylor plays in the toughest conference in the nation. And if you're 50th, and, like, they're in the computers, and, like, going against a conference that deep, like, your record's not going to be projected to be that great. But, like, they still have a lot of talent. And they still are going to throw an interesting challenge at you in the title game. It's going to be a huge game for both teams.
Yeah.
Just, like, resume-wise. Because you don't get, like, a ton of bites at that apple. Like, the Bearcats do. Like, just with, like, the gauntlet that they're going to end up playing. Like, this is a game, like, you really have to, like, show improvement from where you've started, because three of these four games, like, they really hit the struggle bus on offense. And if that's going to be a problem all season long, it's going to be a long 30 games.
Yeah. Like, I honestly don't see, unless Mick completely shakes up the lineup, or, you know, Sosa May finally comes out of his shell, or Trey Scott lives up to his expectations more consistently throughout the year, not just, like, every other game. Or the same thing for Brooks. I think the offense is going to be struggle all season. I mean, they currently rank 79th in adjusted offense, and that is falling, I'm sure. And it's probably going to fall throughout the season. Like, this is probably an offense that's going to end up in, like, the hundreds or so, like, by the time the end of the season comes around.
And it's not just, like, some of it, like, could just be, like, rotational stuff, but the other, like, broader point, like, of this team is, like, you would hope some of these guys could shoot. And they're really, like, no shooters on this team. At least right now that you can, like, guarantee can hit shots. Like, Broom, like, maybe, like, he's gotten off to a really terrible start from three at least. But, like, Cumberland, you can bank on. And the rest, like, you have three guys in your starting lineup that can't make threes, and like in the modern game of basketball, it's like you really can't have three guys in your starting lineup who can't make threes, and the fourth is a spot up shooter.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor Moore was supposed to be that guy coming into the season, and he's 0-5 from three. He's shooting just 22% from the field overall. He's ice cold. Keith Williams doesn't really seem to be like a three-point shooter. Like, he's had a pretty good season so far. But he's still labeled a guard. He's still shooting almost 50% from the field in general. You kind of would have hoped he would have been a better three-point shooter than what he's shown. And then, yeah, like, to your point, like, Justin Jennifer, he's a spot-up shooter who, I mean, let's be honest, he needs to have a space and time to really line up a good shot to make it. And Kane Broom has been just awful from three, 25% from behind the arc. Like I said earlier, I would be happy if Jerron Cumberland scores 20 points a game, but you can't have every other three-point shooter be that ice cold to win a lot of games.
Yeah, definitely not. And I think it's been interesting that Broom has come off the bench like the Milwaukee game, except it since he had to start since they were so thin. But like he's got to be the scoring off the bench, which is a complete the complete opposite of what we thought his role would be as a starter. Like Williams has made more sense defensively for their lineup, and he's played pretty solid. Like and he's like had a nice year. Like 3-point shooting, definitely not his forte. And it's like you kind of like look at some of these and like you wonder where all the points are going to come from. And it's got a like a big burden on him, and he's used 34% of their possessions have ended with him shooting, passing, or turning the ball over. So 18th most in the country. His shot percentage is 37.3%, which is 16th. So this a gigantic burden on him. And then like. And we don't need to harp on Trevor Moore, but he's like used 8% of their possessions, like just like unbelievably low from like a guy who you thought would, like kind of be like a breakout guy off the bench, but then like you look at the other like limited role guys, and it's Trey Scott and Justin Jennifer, two guys that you start, not like the most like amazing thing, right
and,
now.
And you graduate them after this season. They are gone. Those are your second best 3-point options this year, and then there's a giant void after them, and they are gone after this year. That's scary to think about.
Definitely. And really, who knows if like Cumberland has a monster year? Who knows if he'll
stay? Oh God! They're gonna average like 50 a game. Mick will roll out the rare 3-4 lineup.
Let's just play all the bigs at once.
Go for the Guinness Book of World Record as longest team. They've got to get some of those guys to step up. And it's really kind of it's disappointing because, you know, a guy like Moore was pegged to be that shooter from the outside, and he's just ice cold. And maybe it's just the lack of minutes, like, and to your point, he's only, something like 8 minutes a game in significant time? Like, it's not, maybe he just hasn't gotten a chance to get into a rhythm, but it's scary to think, like, you're not getting much out of Cain Broome and Justin Jennifer on a consistent basis, and if they're gone after this year, Samari Curtis better come in with a hot hand, otherwise you're going to have issues offensively next year. But I guess, like, I mean, turning to this season, I mean, I don't know. I don't know where it comes from. Like it just has to come from Broome. Like I don't expect Jennifer to do much of anything. Fredericks isn't getting enough minutes to make much of an impact. Same with Moore. I mean, it just has to fall on Broome. I mean, to his credit, he's picked it up recently. You know, now that he's been moved out of the starting lineup. But it has to come from him.
Yeah, 100%. He's thrown up 31 points the last two games. Like, he's definitely got to be that guy. It seems like getting benched or whatever happened in the second game of the season. Like, the message got through to him. And he's been so much more aggressive the last couple of games.
Yeah. And
it's really, he's got to be. Because you need some balance off the bench. And like, he plays starter minutes. So, I mean, I don't think it really matters a ton that he comes off the bench. It's going to be really interesting to see what things Mick does to mix and match, to try to avoid. Like, your offense doesn't have to be perfect, but, like, one thing your offense definitely has to do is avoid slumps and the multiple minutes without baskets. Like, against anybody decent, even against, like, a team like Milwaukee, a team that's not amazing, but a team that slowed the game down, then... Like, that game was surprisingly close for against a team that I don't even think has a win yet.
Right.
It's, like, it's still, like, a lot of little, like, mixing and matching to do. And, like, they don't really have, like, a ton of time left to do it, because after this, that's when the schedule kicks up, and then you start conference play. It's, like, hopefully they can find some answers this weekend.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm thinking is, like, I feel like this weekend is going to be kind of like your litmus test. Like, you know, we kind of have a feel for what this team is. They, to a degree they are what we expected, to a degree they're not. But, you know, you come into this weekend, you're basically a fifth of the way through the schedule, or a sixth of the way through the schedule, and you should be able to, you know, get a sense for what this team can and can't do, and if they, for all of their positives and negatives, come out of this weekend with an Emerald Coast Classic trophy with a pretty solid win over a good Baylor team, I got to feel pretty good about their chances going forward. You know, given this is a rebuild year, you know, I don't see them really getting a high seed in the tournament. I don't really see them going that far. I don't really see them winning the AAC tournament either right now. But their chances, I feel a lot better about their chances going forward if they do, you know, beat George Mason and likely Baylor this weekend.
Yeah, I think that's one of the interesting things about this Baylor game. It's that, like, we're just assuming they play Baylor. Even if it was like, because that's really the best case scenario, is like you play Baylor.
Yeah.
And, like, if you can get past that team, it's like you look down the schedule and, like, some of these games don't look quite as daunting. And, like, you think, like, oh, if they could just, like, win a majority of, like, their non-conference games, they should be fine to make the tournament and, like, have a decent seed. But if they drop this game and your first two big chances at, like, nice wins, you go 0-2, like, it's, like, really starts to put a lot of pressure on you to perform well against the other teams on your schedule that are a lot tougher. And it's a good look at the team away from home for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I feel like if you're looking, like, slightly down the schedule, like, Northern Kentucky on December 4th, if UC comes out of this tournament with two wins, I feel like they could come back and beat a Northern Kentucky team who's undefeated right now and playing really good basketball pretty comfortably. And that would be a good resume win on their schedule. If they come out of this weekend with one or no wins, I would circle that game as a real, like, a watch out of one where UC could lose a game at home that they should probably win in a lot of scenarios. And it, like, I just think it kind of comes back to, like, our original point. And coming out of this weekend really kind of will give us a good sense of what this team is going to be able to do down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you have one guy who's going to make a ton of plays. It is Cumberland. It's going to be really interesting to see, like, now that you've had some time to adjust and, like, get some guys into new roles and mix with the rotation, like, what the rotation's actually going to be against, like, some better quality opponents.
Yeah.
And, like, hopefully, like, they'll be able to turn the corner and get a couple of huge wins.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I think the floor is 20. I think everything after that is really dependent on, you know, how this team gels and develops going throughout the course of the season. And, you know, if you can get more contributions from guys like Kane Broome or Trevor Moore or Nysier Brooks. And it's just a lot of it's up in the air right now. That's just the scary part. It's exciting and scary. Because I feel like the potential's there. Like, Nysier Brooks, like we talked about earlier, he's sitting on a streak of double-doubles in the last couple of games. I mean, that's his potential. I mean, he's a good, solid player. I mean, definitely coming out of high school. It just, he hasn't quite lived up to those expectations yet. So hopefully this is a season where we start to kind of see him break out and become a kind of player that you know, we were kind of hoping he would be, but we just, like, haven't really seen it up until this point.
Yeah, like 9.8 points, 8 boards, 2 blocks a game. It's like, you'll take that. And if, like, he can bring that the entire season, like, it's a huge bonus. So, like, a really nice breakout. Like, you can't really underestimate how well he's played. And, like, hats off to Nysier Brooks. Because he was, like, the avatar for, like, Matt's complaining about the offense last week. And it was good to see, like, him bounce back with, like, a really solid week.
Yeah.
Let's look at the conference as a whole real quick before we go. The AAC not off to the best of starts. Yeah, two undefeated teams remaining. Like Houston's 3-0. They haven't played anybody. Tulsa's 4-0. They haven't played anybody, and they played Nevada on Thanksgiving, so they're not going to be undefeated.
Wait, Nevada? Never heard of them.
Yeah, I haven't either, but maybe they'll do something with themselves one day.
Yeah.
Outside of, like, UConn beating Syracuse, have you seen, like, anything positive of the league so far?
Memphis is going to be really good in about 1 year. They've looked the part of a team that basically is loaded up with talent, but just isn't, like, quite there yet. Like, they're in a rebuild. Like, Penny Hardaway is definitely loading up the roster with talent, but they look to be a top quarter of the conference kind of team in like one season or two. And I mean, like, you're right. There's not a whole lot of like undefeated teams like out there. I mean, it's Houston and Tulsa, and to your point, they haven't played anybody, but, I mean, UCF, I mean, they look okay. They look kind of the part. They shadow over themselves in the Florida Atlantic, which was awesome. It's awesome for the conference. They'll have a good test on Saturday against Northern Kentucky. They for the most part, look the part, it seems like. And I don't know. I mean, you're right. There aren't a whole lot of positives to, like, say out of this, especially with the way Wichita State's played this season. Like, I thought they were completely undervalued at 8 in the conference coming into the season. But, yeah, they look like crap. They look like they've lost, like, their entire roster, which they have.
And they've had a couple of tough losses, and then they just got, like, beat down by Louisiana Tech. Like, Central Florida is kind of interesting. Like, the bad home loss against Florida Atlantic, which you really can't explain away. They did have, like, a nice little tournament win where they beat St. Joe's and Western Kentucky. But, like, missing out on West Virginia, which really wasn't the best thing. But if, like, Western Kentucky, like, runs through Conference USA, like, I guess they could. Maybe that would be a nice one for them. But they did look pretty impressive, and those games were on TV.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, Wichita State, like, disappointing. Temple just lost to VCU yesterday, their Monday night. And, I don't know. It's been kind of hard to get excited about them, because they haven't played anybody yet. And, like, Memphis, they're kind of interesting, and their schedule gets got a ton tougher. They really play a tough non-conference slate. Like, and their game against LSU was pretty fun. Like, LSU looks kind of legit. But like, their biggest stories are still off the court right now. It's going to be, like, who they bring in, like, recruiting-wise.
Yeah, because, Penny Hardaway's living up to his expectations on the recruiting trail. I'm pretty sure they are favored to get the best center in the country coming into next season, right? I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, the top player in the entire class.
I'm one. James Weissman, yeah, the number one overall player from Memphis, Tennessee. He is like a 92% crystal ball to Memphis, and I think he's announcing in like, I don't know when you're going to post this, but as of now, it's 11:50 on a Tuesday. I think he's announcing at noon, or like 1 o'clock.
He announces in 10 minutes.
Ah, okay, perfect. So 10 minutes from when we're speaking these words, James Weissman is announcing, and yeah, Memphis is going to have like the most talented roster in the conference next season, followed by UConn. And let's hope Samir Torrance says he wants to be a Bearcat, otherwise I'm going to be very worried.
Yeah, and if Cumberland, that guy, has, like, I haven't looked at any draft stuff, but if he's scheduled to be a draft pick, yeah, your roster looks really, really interesting for next season.
I think coming into the season, wasn't he projected to be, like the 35th or 36th overall pick, like second round? Like something like that? I thought he was projected to get drafted, but kind of, you know, out of the first round.
Yeah, that's all I've seen, was just before the season started.
Yeah.
I guess it would be a pretty interesting year for him, just to see if he can like build up his draft stock like Evans did last season. Like he takes a big role in the offense and is as efficient as he has been so far. Like maybe he can get in like that lead first round range.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it should be, this is, I feel like this is going to be kind of an overall down year for the conference. Maybe two or three teams make the tournament if all things go right. But man, starting next season, it's going to be, I feel like it's going to have this Big East feel all over again. I mean, you know, not like 10 teams making the tournament out of 16, but like, I mean, UConn's going to be back. Memphis is trending upward again. It's going to be very, very fun going forward in this conference, just based on those hires.
And SMU, like a really young team this season. It's like they should probably get better as the year goes along. Like we know, like Jokic is a really good coach. Like so, if like they bounce back, that could be like another team that throw in the mix because they play in one of the toughest places to win in the entire league.
Yeah,
which gives them a definite advantage in like almost every single time out.
Yeah.
But like, for this year, it is kind of really hard to get a tell. And like with so many teams kind of, like outside of UConn getting the win against a top 25 team, like so many missed opportunities, a couple of bad losses by teams that you think would make the tournament. So like hopefully the league can bounce back and not be bad. But it seems like there's going to be a lot of churn in this league. I think that's the number one thing we've learned is it's going to be really hard to win this conference.
Well, I think it was like coming into the season, it was kind of in the back of our mind that like there was turnover really throughout the conference. I mean, UC lost what they lost. Rob Gray, Wichita State lost like 8 players to graduation. UConn and Memphis were getting new coaches. The only real mark of stability was UCF and Temple, and they already have a couple of weird losses on their schedule. So it just seems like overall the conference will be kind of hitting that reset button. But I mean, going forward the next few years, it should be a pretty fun conference to play in. Like, you know, I hated UConn games back when they were consistently challenging for conference titles. But I mean, those were some of the most fun games we've had in recent memory is playing UConn. And of course, Memphis, I mean, we can get that rivalry going again. That'd be awesome. So it should be a fun conference going forward. Now that it seems like, you know, a lot of the teams that were historically supposed to be good are really stepping up.
And just like by the Q rating, it's like UConn and Memphis being good has helped the league. And it's like when they're bad, like despite how many teams made the tournament, it just hasn't made the league look like that attractive. Like there wasn't like a ton of buzz around the league last year, like despite Cincinnati being amazing and getting a 2 seed, because like your two of your big programs weren't great.
Right.
And that, like, of course there was some at the end of the year because like the race came to wire with Houston and UC and Wichita. But if you can get the teams like the national writers care about, like back near the top, I think it just helps the league as a whole. And, like, any time, like, you just go out there and dust Memphis and UConn, those are nice feathers in your cap.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, we talk about, you know, the struggles that South Florida and East Carolina have had and the fact that they've really held down the conference. And, you know, you're going to have those basement teams every now and again. But if you're in a conference with a team like a UConn and Memphis that have been historically good for a while, and they're consistently underperforming despite money being poured into those programs. Like, I mean, that's what really drags down the league, is that, you know, those programs that are supposed to be good are completely underperforming and not winning those big RPI games or strength of schedule games to help boost the conference in general. But yeah, getting them back should just help elevate the American Conference into, you know, what it is, which is, you know, one of the higher tier basketball conferences in the country. And it should be a conference that sends like 5 to 6 teams to the tournament most years. It should be, I say. Because like on most years, you should have like UC, SMU, UConn, Memphis, and then a combination of like Houston, Temple, and UCF, right?
Yeah, I kind of think that's fair to say.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's like it's all about like this league just really needs the balance throughout instead of the tiers on the top and bottom. But this does not look like the year that we're going to get the balance throughout. At least on the level where like you have a lot of good teams. It's like a lot of teams with question marks. And and Cincinnati is definitely one of them, which makes their upcoming schedule really interesting. Do you have anything else before we wrap this one up?
Yeah, real quick. I saw this tweeted out. I mean, I saw it this morning at 5:30 when my kid got me up, but Chad Brendel tweeted it out last night, was that Mamadou Diarra's 9 minutes he had last night was the first he's had, apparently, at the five. Up until then, he'd been playing the four for whatever reason. And, you know, lo and behold, last night he's at the five and he picks up 6 boards. And he plays, you know, actual meaningful minutes. What do you make of that, Scott? Like, is that kind of, like, surprising to you? Or are you... For me, I had no idea he was playing the four up until then. Because, I mean, we hadn't had that much film on him when he was a Bearcat, but, like, I had always thought he was five.
Well, like, size-wise, he's, what, 6'8", 6'9". It's like it wouldn't make sense if, like, he didn't play the five. But we just really didn't see enough of him last year to really get, like, any type of, like, grasp on what position he played. And, like, he played, like, the late-game minutes. He played him with, like, Brooks. So, I don't know. Like, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, he's definitely the five. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was a little surprised because I feel like when we look at Mamadou Diarra, it's 100% upside. It's kind of like Brooks. Like, there's a lot of hype coming into the season with him. And it just seems weird that he was playing, like, an unnatural position. I don't know. I saw that tweet, and I was just, like, shocked that he was playing the four. And, you know, maybe in the grand scheme of things, a four and a five are a little bit, or, you know, they are not that much different. But, I mean, if he's played the five his entire life and is more used to kind of having his back to the basket and kind of guarding the rim like Brooks would, it's a little surprising to me that UC would, you know, try him at the four and would keep running him out there, like, at the four. Because I feel like that's only just kind of hindering his opportunity to see the floor.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Like, granted, like, he didn't really get a ton of run last year. But, like, if he's going to play, like, a position he's more comfortable in, yeah, I think that's definitely better for his development. Because those guys, where it could be really interesting to see where he is in, like, 1 or 2 years. Or probably 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of those guys, like, you're going to have to develop and get better. He's got some interesting talent. Like, for sure. He's just really, really, really raw.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. So, I don't know. That was my last little thought. I just saw that last night, and I was just a little surprised. So I just wanted to chat through that.
It is an interesting little tidbit. Like, yeah, who knew the Mamadou Diarra talk was coming?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he had such a good game against Western Michigan, and then, like, that tweet now is like, oh, he's been playing the wrong position for a year and a half. Okay.
Yeah. Like, what does that say about this coaching staff?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that. Well, maybe we'll find out going forward, but anyways.
Yeah, that was a good way to end it. So I don't have any fun facts myself. But I would say, like, have a good Thanksgiving. Hopefully we'll come back with some Bearcat victories.